You're a little older and a lot wiser. The future is yours. Define aging on your own terms. Welcome to AARP Without Limits with your host, Mike Olander.
Hello and welcome. This is AARP Without Limits, WPTF Talk Radio, disrupting aging with the power of 50,000 watts. And our podcast, available anytime on demand at WPTF.com or through our Facebook, AARP North Carolina. I'm your host, Mike Olander, the State Director of AARP North Carolina. We've got a great program for you today, folks. Joe Stewart is with us to talk about North Carolina's primary elections, what happened, and what to watch out for as we march towards the general election in November. But before we get to him, ladies and gentlemen, as always, we begin with a little chit-chat with my partner in crime here at the studio, our esteemed production engineer, Mr. Jason Kung. Jason, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, Mike, ready for the onslaught of more political ads.
Tis the season for that, for sure. But before we get to that, Jason, I have to say, you know, we're in a different studio space today here at WPTF. A little fancier, lots of monitors, lots of clocks, lots of old relics from previous talk shows here at the station. But you're in a separate room, separated from me by glass.
It's for your own safety.
Is it really? Okay. We'll look at the bright side of that. Anyway, Jason, before we bring on Joe Stewart, I have to say I'm really excited to have Joe with us today. I think there are, you know, there's nobody better here in the state to give a good analysis of what happened to here in North Carolina with our primary elections, and you know, what do we need to be looking out for beyond the headlines that the media are sharing with us. Before we get to that, Jason, this is a really big week, and you know, we like to keep it really light here during the introduction of the show, but got to get to a real serious topic with you here, Jason. And no, it's got nothing to do with the primary election. It's got nothing to do with the State of the Union address from President Biden. Jason, this weekend is daylight saving.
Oh, you're exactly right.
It is. And you know me, I'm a very seasonal guy. So, of course, you're going to have to indulge me a little bit more here on this. Really curious, Jason, what's your take? You know, there's this debate on whether we should have it, whether we should not. You're a Florida guy. You know, so seasons for you and all that, really not, you know, the same experience that we have up in the Northeast and many other parts of the country. What's your take on daylight saving, its usefulness? Should we keep it? You know, what do you think?
I used to be a get rid of it kind of guy, mm-hmm. but now with young kids, my thought is it's easier to convince them it's time to take a bath and get ready for bed when it's dark outside. So I'm in favor of that.
Well, okay, very good. I have to say, I never thought of it quite from that angle, but you're right, though. It does come in handy sometimes, especially, you know, when you want them to get to be like, oh, yep, it's 8 o'clock already, kids, time to get into bed. And they're like, wait a minute, it only feels like 7. Yeah, I wonder why that is. Well, good for you, Jason. Again, I know you got a new little one in your household keeping you up at night. Hopefully you're doing better with some rest. And unfortunately, you know, we either fall back or we spring ahead. Here we are, we're springing ahead. So you are losing an hour of sleep. So yeah, an hour earlier to bedtime for the kids, but you do lose an hour of sleep. One of the things, Jason, I want to share is, you know, we like to share some fun facts from time to time here at AARP Without Limits. And I'd be remiss if I didn't jump in and share some fun facts from AARP.org, actually, related to daylight savings. And I think some of this might be interesting. First off, folks, it is daylight saving times, not daylight savings time. It's not plural. It was not invented by Ben Franklin, though he did talk about it and he's quoted on the topic. He did not invent it. It wasn't implemented for farmers either. And this is another misconception. That's the practice originated to benefit farmers. In fact, the agricultural industry lobbied against daylight saving time after it was introduced in the United States. Many farmers continue to oppose the practice, which can disrupt farm work. For example, dairy cows expect to be milked at the same hour each day, regardless of what the clock says. Germany was the first country to implement daylight saving time. It's not a worldwide phenomenon, nor even nationwide, as we know here Even in our own state, Jason, I was surprised when I looked into this a little bit to learn that there have been hundreds, literally hundreds of bills over the year, bills here in North Carolina introduced over the years that would change the practice. The time frame used to be different, and you may recall back during the George W. Bush administration, the period was shortened. That was part of the Energy Policy Act, I believe, which went into effect in 2017, and it does have an impact on health. That's the last fun fact I will share, according to a number of health authorities out there. Unfortunately, daylight saving has been shown, it has been linked to heart attacks, strokes, traffic fatalities, and workplace injuries. And many sleep experts have called for an end to the practice altogether. So AARP, as you know, we take positions on various pieces of public policy. This is not one of them. So my opinion is my own, not AARP's. I have to say, Jason, I'm kind of rooted in tradition. Daylight saving always for me meant sort of the end of the Northeast winter, springing into the warmer season, which of course was a source of great joy for me both as a child as an adult. So interested folks, as always, to hear what you think when you go to our Facebook, AARP North Carolina, when you see the show posted, feel free to weigh in, shoot us a line or shoot us an opinion, a comment. And of course, you can always reach us, AARP Without Limits, at aarp.org. Now, onto the more serious matter. Folks, as you know, we just had a primary election here in North Carolina. North Carolina is a really important state this year for a number of reasons. And I'm very happy to have with us our guest, Joe Stewart. He's the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. They work to protect IIANC members' interests, and they coordinate with colleagues in Washington on federal regulatory issues as well. You may also know Joe from his prior role as the executive director of the North Carolina Free Enterprise Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts objective research and analysis that helps business leaders better understand the politics, the public policy, and the economic vitality in North Carolina. He's also been following and active in North Carolina politics for more than 30 years. Joe Stewart, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
So we just had a primary election. What's your take, Joe? What can you tell us about who came out to vote? You know, what was voter turnout like both across the state generally and in key races?
Yeah, interestingly enough, we had every expectation that perhaps the turnout of registered voters, the percentage of people eligible to vote, would be perhaps slightly lower than it is normally, in large part because there's not a U.S. Senate race in North Carolina. Just the way the two U.S. Senate seats, the six-year terms are not, don't coincide. So every now and then there's a election cycle in which there's not a U.S. Senate race on the ballot. And because there's not that high level up ballot, a significant race, sometimes that discourages some people from participating. The other factor was, in large part, the up-ballot races, principally the presidential primary and the gubernatorial primary, were more or less already known. Everyone knew that Joe Biden was likely to be the winner in the Democratic primary. In fact, Biden was the only name on the Democratic ballot in North Carolina. By the time of our primary, March 5th, a Super Tuesday, when a number of states voted, pretty much already known that Donald Trump was going to be the nominee. He's not quite there yet in terms of the delegates secured for the Republican nominating convention, but getting close. And so the gubernatorial contest, Josh Stein, the leading Democratic candidate, and Mark Robinson, the leading Republican candidate, all the polling had showed they were comfortably ahead from their opponents. So our turnout was about 24% of eligible voters that voted, 31% in 2020, the last presidential election. So a little off of that. But probably the most notable thing that we saw in this, I should say two things, really. One, there did appear to be manifest a little bit of an anti-establishment streak in the voter attitudes in some of these races, where candidates that were considered to be significantly advantaged, either because of name recognition or because of financial resources in their campaign, lost, most notably in the superintendent of public instruction Republican primary. And the other is, in the exit polling that was conducted among those people, Republicans and unaffiliated voters that chose to vote in the Republican primary that supported Nikki Haley, overwhelmingly, they told the pollster in the exit poll as they left the precinct on election day, almost two-thirds of them said they would absolutely not support Donald Trump if he ended up being the nominee in the Republican primary. So we get a little glimpse into what the Trump campaign is going to need to do, assuming Donald Trump goes on to be the Republican nominee, as is expected. There's work to be done in terms of winning over what are, at this point, that portion of the Republican base of voters who supported Nikki Haley in a large part because they're not yet ready and willing to support Donald Trump.
I have to say, thank you so much for that, Joe. And it is fascinating to see what's going on in our state. Just, you know, nationally, there's a narrative going on how divided the country is. And, you know, you can read into things like turnout, as you mentioned before, this sense of an anti-establishment feel to things. We're going to dig deeper into that when we continue our conversation with Joe Stewart. This is AARP Without Limits. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is AARP Without Limits. Just a reminder, folks, that we always love to hear from you. If you have a question, if you have a comment, if you have a suggestion for a future topic or guest, please send us an email to aarpwithoutlimits@aarp.org. We've been speaking today with Joe Stewart. He's the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina. We've been talking about the primary election we just had here in North Carolina. Joe, we were talking before about turnout and giving some insights as to what that could mean. As the results, speaking of the results themselves, what caught your attention the most during these elections and why?
Yeah, there's always two observations I make about any particular election cycle. One is that the money matters, and money matters a lot in terms of campaigns. It's not the only thing that matters, but the part of a successful campaign that it matters in is pretty significant. But in some instances, some other dynamic overtakes a financial advantage one candidate may have over the other. In the Republican primary for Lieutenant Governor, Hal Weatherman, who was a longtime announced candidate, been working since early last year on his candidacy to seek the office of Lieutenant Governor, did a tremendous job of getting out the vote, ended up being the top vote getter. It will go to a runoff. It was Jim O'Neill, who's a district attorney in Forsyth County, came in second. Neither one of the candidates got 30%, the margin necessary to avoid a runoff. But Weatherman, not necessarily an incredibly well-financed campaign, but really tapped into a lot of appearances that he made with Republican groups across the state, and so was able to overcome not having the necessary resources to directly communicate through advertising with voters, but won people over with a real grassroots-oriented campaign. In this day and age, when literally we expect over $700, maybe $800 million to be spent in North Carolina outside groups, candidates themselves in this election cycle, it still does matter to some extent to some voters in some races to have had an opportunity to meet the candidate personally. And that's just an interesting dynamic. We'll see if that translates into the fall as well. But at least in the Republican primary for Lieutenant Governor, that kind of grassroots campaigning really seemed to make a difference.
Now, Joe, we're always hearing about polls, and we're hearing, you know, various predictions by folks in the media. Were there any surprises out there? Were there things or predictions that were made by the media or by commentators about, you know, either turnout or, you know, who's going to be the victor or by what margin that were really, really off? Did you have any major surprises out there?
Yeah, I think the one is, I'd mentioned before, the Republican primary in the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, Catherine Truitt, the incumbent, multiples of money more than her Republican opponent, Michelle Morrow. Morrow had only ever run for Wake County School Board once before, so had only been a candidate once before. Truitt has been superintendent since 2020. And again, a candidate that tapped into an existing grassroots network. Morrow talked a lot within the context of groups of very conservative Republicans that are concerned about public education issues and really tapped into those networks and pulled out a surprise win of 52-48, which seems like it's kind of close. But to overcome an incumbent of your own party in a primary is no small feat. And so we'll see if Morrow is able to convert that kind of Republican Party and primary-oriented enthusiasm into what's needed to cross over and get other voters in an attempt to win in the fall.
One of the things that wasn't a surprise this week was the governor's race, right? This may be one of the most watched in the country. Aside from tracking the poll numbers, what are you going to be watching out for in this race this year?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing is we do have the expectation North Carolina will be a battleground state, very competitive, one of maybe five or six races in the country that will, in all likelihood, determine who is president of the United States. And ultimately, in aggregate, because as you know, we don't popularly elect our presidents, it's the electoral college votes that the state brings. But you could still see in those combination of battleground states, that handful of places in the country that will be competitive in the presidential contest, the ultimate decision of who the next president of the United States is may be made by fewer than 20,000 people. That many races that close, it could be just a tiny percentage of Americans who actually determine these races. And so we know the presidential race will cast a long shadow over the rest of the down ballot races in North Carolina. A lot of money spent by both the Democrat and Republican Party on their presidential candidates here. A lot of appearances in all likelihood of Joe Biden and Donald Trump should they be the nominees in North Carolina. The question is, will that influence the gubernatorial race? We did see in a previous election where Donald Trump was on the ballot, Roy Cooper was on the ballot. There seemed to be people that voted for Trump, but also voted for Cooper. Will there be Trump-Stein voters? That's sort of one of the questions. But the attorney general's race, Dan Bishop, the Republican, and Jeff Jackson, the Democrat, two up-and-comers in their respective parties, two people seen as having a bright future in their party's politics and electoral office. That may be the race with the greatest amount of focus, in large part because I think there's a good possibility that crime, criminal justice, and issues about border security will become more poignant as campaign election issues as we get closer to the election. And I think voters have a tendency to think of crime and criminal justice issues being more about the attorney general than any other race. So we may see what is typically a down ballot race in attorney general become more like an up ballot race in this year's election.
I have to say, I was going to ask you about the AG race, and in my opinion, yeah, that's kind of the untold story here that the national media hasn't picked up on yet. If you've got two high-profile, charismatic, very media-savvy candidates, both of them members of Congress, both of them from the Charlotte area, Dan Bishop and Jeff Jackson. You know, Dan Bishop definitely was very visible during the whole House Speaker debate. You know, we saw him making the rounds on the cable news shows. And Jeff Jackson, of course, sort of this TikTok hero with a lot of followers and impact. It's going to be pretty fascinating. Just me, not speaking on behalf of AARP here, but just as somebody who's a political junkie, just curious to see how this plays out. Joe, got a kind of a broader question for you. You've been following North Carolina politics for a long time. Every election, they say how this is the most important one of our lifetimes. This one truly is different. The political climate is very hot, very divided. What's your personal take on where we are as a country or a state politically? And do you share the concerns out there that are being expressed?
Yeah, you know, I often get this question about the relative level of divisiveness. And I remind people that Thomas Jefferson spread a rumor that John Adams was a hermaphrodite. And so, you know, this is a rough and tumble enterprise politics, and it always has been. It's just more present now. The social media environment and the internet makes it just available to us in every single moment of our lives. And I think that makes it feel more divisive than it probably is. There's two factors that I think really matter in North Carolina. One is more than half of the voters in North Carolina now are non-native. They've come from other parts of the country and other parts of the world to live here. And the other is now the younger generation of Americans are the largest portion of the electorate. They don't turn out in the same percentages as older Americans do. But younger people perceive issues of ideology and partisan orientation in a far different way than their older generation cohorts. And I think those dynamics mixed in with the increasing urbanization in North Carolina is going to make us a very different place than we've been historically from a voter standpoint. And we are really a work in progress in that regard. We don't entirely know what all of those factors combined will mean. But it is significant and will continue to be significant in elections in the not too distant future.
Mm. Joe, one big question here. You know, we all are. There's so much information that's out there. So many people more and more get their information from social media, which has its own perspective. And of course, there are bots and all these other things we didn't have. in the past. You, as you know, for 30 years, you know, you've my understanding of you is, you know, you've had a obviously a real eye on policy, but also an appreciation for the political game, you know, and just having an understanding of, you know, what's real, what's not, what are the important things to be focusing on, what's fact versus opinion and so forth. For folks out there who are really looking to try and get the best information possible, what do you recommend as far as news sources or folks here in North Carolina, political reporters or others, opinion leaders who are playing it, you know, straight down the middle, who are giving good objective information so folks can make the have the best information possible?
Yeah, and I always counsel people to, it's not about one particular source or one particular reporter. It's a making sure that you're getting a diversity of opinions. I think some of the reporters that cover state politics that are exceptionally good that I've known, in most in my experience, most reporters really do have at their core a desire to try to get the information out. Is there some bias? Well, they're human beings. And so to some extent, they're going to inject into anything they report a little bit of their perspective on it, as well as just the facts and figures. Colin Campbell at WNC Radio is a particularly good political reporter, has been doing it in a lot of different mediums, including radio, as his start, and now back in radio, was in print for a while. Tim Boyum at Spectrum News is an incredibly knowledgeable reporter about politics, really understands the fundamentals of it. Lucille Sherman with Axios Raleigh is a very different media delivery system. It's a daily email correspondence to its subscribers. She comes from the print background, but it is a really good, fresh, young perspective that she brings about all things politics. But I really encourage people to also look into following some of the academic sources. We have great collegiate polling programs. High Point University, Elon University, East Carolina, Meredith College in Raleigh all have polling programs with faculty that provide really good insights in terms of what public opinion research they're doing and how to interpret where voter attitudes are from election to election. It's an incredibly valuable resource in North Carolina, these academic institutions. And some of the academics that I follow, in addition to these polling programs, Michael Bitzer at Catawba College is probably the dean of the delegation in terms of academics in the state that provide good objective analysis of things going on in not only our politics here in North Carolina, but nationally. And Dr. Chris Cooper at Western Carolina, sort of a younger, a fresher perspective on many of these things too. But that combination of a variety of sources and seeking out academic information as well on politics, I think provides you the best opportunity for a balanced assessment of what's actually taking place in our state.
Joe, really, really appreciate you sharing your opinion, your perspective with us today. We're going to have you back on the show as we get closer to the general election. Thank you so much for being with us. Folks, that is a wrap. I want to thank Joe Stewart for being our guest. Thank you to Jason Kong for production. Thank you for listening. This has been AARP Without Limits. I'm Mike Olander with AARP North Carolina. We'll see you next time.